Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks so much for being here. I'm excited to be a part of this panel. So I'm going to talk a little bit today sort of about APHA's role in advocacy for public health programs. And I think my presentation is going to sort of work well with Adrian's on sort of the importance of advocating, why advocacy matters, and why we sort of talk about advocacy as an important part of strengthening public health programs. So then I'll talk a little bit more about sort of how to get involved and what opportunities APHA offers, since you're all here, as you know, supporters of APHA in your section, what kinds of the programs that we offer for advocacy, and then some of the resources that we offer as well. So why does advocacy matter? Why do we ask people to go to Capitol Hill? Why do we ask you to send in action alerts? Why do we ask you to call your members of Congress? The first one is because members of Congress listen to the views of their constituents. They care as constituents what you have to say, or I should say they should care. They're elected because they're supposed to be representing the views of their constituents. We're obviously in a sort of interesting political climate now where that's not always the case for some of the members that you all may have. But that's the point of sort of why we ask people to be advocates for these programs. Public health needs a voice. So what do I mean by that? We're obviously in a budget climate, and I'll touch on this a little bit later, but we're in a budget climate where we're having programs across the country fighting for the same sort of very limited pool of dollars. Public health doesn't necessarily always rise to the top of the New York Times articles about programs that are being cut and the impact of these programs. So as advocates, we need to be talking about these issues and about the importance of the programs that we support and why they matter and what the impact that these cuts are going to have on programs back home in districts. Part of that, you can help shape the national debate. You can talk about what these cuts are going to mean to programs, what it means when we start talking about cutting HRSA and CDC and other public health agencies by 20% and 30%. What does that look like on the ground? What does that mean for MCH programs? What does it mean for sort of public health as a whole? I think Adrian will sort of be able to touch on the other side of this, but you help educate members of Congress and their staff. We like to think that a lot of, healthcare staffers on the Hill are all huge public health advocates and have long background in public health and really get the issues like Adrian does. That's not always the case, and that's not necessarily the fault of the staffers. You know, you may be meeting or you may be talking to congressional staffers who have spent their entire congressional careers working on Medicare payment policy, and that's sort of their niche, and that's what they focus on within healthcare. And public health has just never been something that they really focus on. So that's where we rely on advocates to come in and sort of explain how, first of all, what's the connection between the issues that they have been working on in public health, and what does public health mean? You become a resource for them, and you're able to talk about the importance of these programs in your state and your district and really bring it down to the level that people are going to understand so that we're talking about what this means for their constituents and what it means for families living in their districts. Again, the budget climate requires members of Congress to prioritize programs. We're in a situation now where some of our longtime champions of public health programs, MCH programs, are sitting on committees where their entire task is to cut federal spending. And we're going up against, they're having to decide between cutting important MCH programs, public health programs in general, education programs, workforce programs, obviously all programs that are connected and that work together to strengthen families and to strengthen public health. And they're having to cut all of them, and they're having to sort of prioritize where these cuts are going to come in. So we need to be able to create a unified voice of support for these programs. And I think this is also going to touch on Adrian's presentation as well, I'm sure, but champions of public health really need to know that they have support from the community. Again, we're, you know, these people who have been with us for a long time, Senator Patty Murray, others who are sitting on the super committee, the Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction, they have been with us forever. They've been our champions. They've been introducing legislation. They've been fighting for these programs. And now they're going to have to cut our programs in some way. And they need to know that they have our support and that we're going to keep fighting for these programs. Members who haven't been with us necessarily need to know that their constituents care about our program, about public health programs, about MCH programs, and we're going to continue to defend them. We often get questions when people are, we're asking people to go to the Hill to talk to their members of Congress. We'll get sort of the one group who's, their members of Congress might be the Tom Harkins, the Patty Murrays, the people who've been with us forever and who've been huge champions of our issues. And they come to us and say, why do I need to go and meet with them? Like, Tom Harkin gets it. He put all the money in there, in health reform for prevention. Why do we need to go talk to him about the importance of protecting the Prevention and Public Health Fund? Well, first of all, he needs to know that people support him and that people have his back. These members are taking very tough votes right now. It's not always sort of the easiest position to go down to the floor of the House or the Senate and vote to not only increase funding, but to stabilize funding for these programs. There's a lot of voices on the other side that are really critical of what those members are doing. So they need to know that they have the support of the community. On the other side, we get a lot of questions about, you know, I live in a district and my member of Congress has never voted to support any of the programs that I care about. They're against, you know, every public health program from A to Z. You know, is it going to be talking to a brick wall if I go to them? Well, if they never hear that people don't care, that people are, that their constituents are opposed to how they've been voting, what incentive do they ever have to change? So we really encourage people to go to those members and to let them know that their votes aren't acceptable to their constituents and that they're having impacts. And that's where I think you all as advocates are able to go in and talk about, you know, you voted to cut X, Y, and Z programs. Here's what, you know, here's how I see it as a public health practitioner or working at a local health department or working on an MCH program. Here's the number of kids that aren't going to get health care this year. Here's the number of pregnant moms who aren't going to be able to access resources because of the votes that you took. So that's where we, you know, encourage, it's important to talk to members on both ends of the spectrum. So how do you get involved? What are some of the things that you all can do as advocates, not only when you're here in D.C. For meetings like this and for other meetings that you might have, but when you're back home in your district? So, of course, I'm going to put a plug in to visit our advocacy page, which is on our website. We have a lot of different resources that I'll touch on later for different ways that you can get involved and start influencing the process. I think a great way is to sort of look for information about legislative activities that are happening, key moments in the legislative process. You can look and see when Congress is in session, if there's major bills that are starting to come up. There's hearings happening on different issues that are important. You can look on sort of, you can start targeting committees that you're interested in, see what issues they're looking at, what kinds of legislation they're going to be looking at, if there's sort of different programs that you see starting to pop up in the news. You can, you know, those are always important ways to sort of insert yourself in the process and see so that it's, you know, your advocacy is timely. Again, I think with the new data being released, we always, you know, there's a lot of studies that have been released. I was just looking through the clips this morning here. As, you know, members, I don't know if you all are, and if there's members of academia here, but it's great if there's new studies that are being released on the programs that you have, if there's new data, to talk to your congressional staff, to talk to people and let them know that there is new information out there and that the study, the resources and the research might be helpful in their work. So setting up a meeting with your members in D.C. or at home in your district. Obviously, if you're in D.C., we encourage everybody to go to Capitol Hill, and I'll put in a plug for our APHA advocacy booth in the Expo. It's 4103. We have Hill packets and all information ready to send you to the Hill. There's always studies being, or there was a big study being done that was done last year of congressional staff asking for sort of, you know, what is the most effective form of advocacy. Meeting with your members or going to a town hall, sort of in-person advocacy is always going to be the most effective. You're having a conversation, you're available to ask them questions, they can ask you questions and really be a resource. Town hall meetings, constituent events happening. We saw this sort of weird thing over the summer where a lot of members of Congress just didn't have any town hall events. They didn't open themselves up to constituents in any way throughout the entire congressional August congressional recess, which is unfortunate, obviously, because they're elected to represent you, to take your views and your concerns back to Washington when they vote on issues. But there are always opportunities. There are always there's staff back in your districts that you can start to create a relationship with, that you can become a resource for these staff on these on the public health issues. Letters to the editor, op-eds. Our website has a lot of sample letters that you can send in. We have a great sort of case study over the summer in Montana. Our Montana affiliate has had, I think, 8, as of yesterday, letters to the editor published on public health and prevention funding in the state of Montana, and 3 op-eds. There's, you know, only a few statewide papers in Montana. A lot of those were placed in local papers. That's a great example. Montana was a great state for that to happen in because they're one member of the House of Representatives, chairs the Labor HHS Appropriations Appropriations Subcommittee, so is responsible for sort of what the public health service agencies, the level of funding that they're going to get next year. And one of their two senators sits on the super committee. So that was a great opportunity for us to really raise those issues in the state. And when we bring those letters to the editor, to congressional staff here in D.C., they start to see that their constituents are sort of making waves back in the state about these issues and really are not going to be quiet when these programs start to take cuts. So just a couple of different resources that we offer as well. Our FACT campaign, hopefully if you all are ABHA members, you got emails about this over the summer. It's a public health advocacy campaign, and we target this on the August congressional recess, again, when members are home in their district, when the entire point of congressional recess is to sort of be able to listen to your constituents and to find out what people are saying back in your district. We work a lot with our state affiliates, with our members and other supporters, and we provide materials and resources. We provide sample letters to the editor, sample email requests to set up a meeting with your members, sample phone scripts, sample emails, action alerts, and we really encourage our participants to share their stories with other advocates. I think part of the reason that people don't become advocates for public health issues, for MCH issues, is because they're just a little scared or they just don't really know how to do it. What's going to be the answer? What if I meet with a staffer who's not very friendly? What if I send in a letter and it doesn't get published? So we really encourage people to share their stories so you can understand that, A, advocating is easy and it's fun, and it really makes you feel like you're influencing the process. Our action alerts, we have a whole page on our website devoted to action. Because APHA represents public health issues, everything from food safety to MCH to emergency preparedness to reproductive health and many other issues, we don't usually have an action alert on every single issue because that would just get a little bit overwhelming, mostly for our government relations staff of two people. It just becomes ineffective at some point. So instead of that, we have all of our action alerts somewhat targeted, and of course we keep them targeted on legislation that's moving through Congress. But we also have an entire section in each alert that's editable, where you can go in and just write in a few sentences about, if we're talking about protecting the prevention and public health fund, you can add in specific things about MCH programs, about the programs that you're seeing in your district, in your state, and what the impact that cutting the prevention fund would have on those programs. They're an easy way to let your member of Congress know your views. You literally can go in, if you don't want to edit them, type in your name and address and just hit send and it will automatically go. It's just a great way to be able to easily sort of let them know, get you on record as being for or against any of the specific programs that we're talking about. Again, meeting with members. I think Adrian will probably talk a lot more about this and be on the other side of the process, but I think the main thing to get from this is that you really do become a resource for staff on these issues. You're able to share materials and data, and you're able to share local examples and stories. So, when you go in and you're able to talk to a member about a specific MCH program that's happening in Columbus, Ohio, and you can talk about the impact that you're seeing on families, on kids in your district, I'm just using Columbus as an example, you're able to sort of bring it down from the 30,000-foot level of where we're talking about, huge budgets for these public health service agencies, billions and billions of dollars, and what that looks at when, if you have an agency with a $6 billion budget and we're talking about a cut of 3 or 4%, well, that might not seem like that big of a deal at that level, but then when you start looking at where those cuts are going to impact Columbus and how steep those cuts are going to get at the state level and what that means for families, how many kids aren't going to be able to access health care that year, any specifics that you can make the connection there. Again, becoming a resource, we had a couple of people ask in the session that I did a couple of days ago, I've gone to my health, to the congressional staff for 3 or 4 times. Every time I'm in D.C., I meet with them. Why do I need to keep going back? What's the point? They get it. They've heard from me before. Well, I feel like every time you go, you're able to share information, you're able to share new resources, and then you become really the resource on that issue. I'm sure Adrian will be able to touch on this as well, but when I was on the Hill, we had a great advocacy group back in Oregon that worked on hunger issues, and they were just fantastic. They came to meet with us every single time they were in D.C. They always wanted to talk to me, and they were great. It was sort of the same kind of thing every time. We were still talking about the same issues. But the minute that my boss was interested in introducing legislation on that issue, they were the first group that I called because I knew they knew the issue. I trusted their information, and I trusted that they were a strong supporter of these issues. And they were the people that I was able to say, you know, if you were able to create legislation on this, what would it look like? Where would we, you know, what would the priorities be? What kind of budgets are we talking about here? So again, some other resources that we offer. Every year, APHA in our February Nation's Health publishes a vote record on public health legislation. We usually pick about 5 or 6 votes from the Senate and 5 or 6 from the House. This year, the House has provided us so many votes on repealing every bill, you know, every issue that we care about. We'll have to pick and choose from that. You know, we encourage people to look at those. We caution you to not use that as the only way to determine if your member of Congress has been supportive of public health issues in the past. There are certain bills that just have, may have missed one priority, and that's why a member didn't vote for them. But it's a good way to see if your member of Congress got a 0 or a 20% or 100% to sort of gauge where they are on the issues. We have fact sheets on public health issues. We always encourage people, if there's a fact sheet that you don't see on our website that you're interested in, let us know. We'd be happy to work something up. And we also, we share fact sheets. We work a lot with AmChip, with other groups on, sharing information, sharing fact sheets, and cross-posting information like that. We also post all of the letters that we send, either as APHA alone or in coalition, to Congress, to White House, to agencies. So if you ever want to see if there's you see an interesting article in the newspaper or something on the news, you want to see if APHA weighed in on it or if any of the other sort of public health groups that we work with, if we weighed in, you can always check because we'll always put that put those on our website, either supporting or opposing that. So following up, so what do you do either after you've met with a member of Congress or after you've gone to a town hall, you've taken some sort of advocacy action? I always highly recommend sending a thank you note. That might just be, the manners my mom instilled in me when I was 5 years old for birthday presents. But I think a thank you note is also a great way to answer any questions that might have gone unanswered in the meeting, to offer yourself again as a resource, to offer a tour or a site visit of one of your programs or something that's funded with federal dollars, and to be able to stay in touch as other issues arise. If you see issues coming up on the ground that you want to talk to your staff about or to congressional staff about, ask questions. And then again, offer to meet with local district staff. Start making connections back in your district. Those staff members live in the district. They're always going to be there, and they're a great way to be able to stay connected to what's happening on the ground.